This is Between the Covers, a literature quickie on your community radio station, WCOM-FM, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. I'm your host, Tofu Dave Bellin, and I'm here with Sarah St. Vincent, the new author of a Melville House title, Ways to Hide in Winter. Hello, Sarah. How are you today?
Hi, Dave. Doing well. Great to be with you.
Well, we've spoken on our show about all sorts of books, and you have a really interesting take here on the combination of, I guess to me, modern life, fear and friendship in the modern age, and something that a lot of people in North Carolina can relate to, the sort of tension in life between city living and living in remote locations. You want to tell us a little bit about the book and why you wrote it?
Sure, thank you. So the book features a main character who is a young, vulnerable, and disabled, increasingly opioid-addicted young woman who is still very proud, very stoic, very smart, resourceful. She's working in a very isolated mountaintop general store on South Mountain in Pennsylvania, which is part of the Blue Ridge Range. And she's created a kind of bubble of safety and comfort for herself after a terrible car accident that killed her husband and left her in a very injured state.
Right.
And so she's created this sort of zone of safety, and then one day a mysterious stranger walks into the store and shatters all that. And the mysterious stranger is essentially a failed asylum seeker, an undocumented immigrant from the former Soviet Union. He's from Uzbekistan. He's on the run from the authorities. And he also has some secrets looming in his past. And so the novel is both a backward and forward-looking mystery, if you like. It's about their own varied histories and what drives them, and then what you do when somebody you fundamentally come to care about and even love, you know, when you realize that they've done something horrible in the past.
And they're also so different, possibly, from you. One of the things I liked about it was your main character who works in the store is in some ways seems to be hiding herself from the world and very afraid of the world. And this gentleman enters the picture who, while there's something you're wondering about in his past that you don't really know, he actually seems to be very intelligent and, at least to her, very kind and thoughtful. And it's a very, very human and interesting mix. I was wondering if that is something that came out of some incidents in your own life where you may have had that sort of relationship with anybody.
Well, I can say writing the book caused me to reflect on my time in college. You know, I grew up in a very small community in rural Pennsylvania, and going to a small liberal arts college with especially people who are from higher socioeconomic backgrounds than me. Was really jarring, and I retrenched. I retrenched hard. I really, if anything, kind of over-identified with being a rural woman and a, you know, a country living, and it took me a long time to be comfortable with both those things, to say, I love my upbringing. I love the place where I grew up, but I'm not afraid of urban areas or other people who are new to me. And you're right, the stranger, he comes from, I think to many people will be a big question mark of a background, you know, an ethnic Russian from Uzbekistan, but that was deliberate. I wanted Kathleen, the main character, to really have no preconceived notions of who this person would be or their kind of cultural habits. They're really able to relate to each other as people, and I've had that experience, you know, I've been fortunate, around the world where no matter where you go or how different people are or may seem to be from you, you can still connect to them as humans. They're still very human people with human motivations, and I think hopefully that comes through in the book.
Yes, and I too share that experience. We have that even here. We have a lot of Spanish-speaking immigrants, and I encounter them, if not every day, every week, and it's actually always charming and a wonder to cross connections, be able to trade thoughts and feelings with them. Sarah,
absolutely. Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
I wanted to ask you something else. I was looking at your background, and I see that you are currently a researcher for Human Rights Watch on national security and surveillance issues. Is that still correct?
Yes, that is absolutely right. And I think at first those may seem to be two very different things. There is no government surveillance in this book.
Yes, and that's what surprised me. Right.
Yeah, and yet it is a book about privacy in a lot of ways. In the way that having a bubble of privacy is what lets us explore ourselves and our feelings and is in many ways tied to dignity. I think that Kathleen, after going through these terrible experiences, goes to a place that's very private, literally goes to a place that's very private, where she is able to rediscover herself and her values and just reestablish dignity and a sense of self-worth. So in that sense, they're not entirely different things.
And we only have a few minutes left, but I did want to stay on this issue of privacy and surveillance for just a minute, since you're so knowledgeable. And we've had many listeners who have asked, is it really possible to have a private life in the modern age? And I don't recall your characters really dealing with cell phones. I remember landlines functioning and not functioning. In our modern age, for instance, where you live, 90% or more of the population is walking around with a device in their purse or pocket that tracks their location all the time. And that's their cell phone. Can we really lead private lives now?
That's such a great question. I'm glad you asked it. There's a reason the book is set when it is. It's set in 2000, 2008, when smartphones are not quite as omnipresent. And it also reflects the reality that still to this day, for many rural people, if you want internet access, especially if you want high-speed internet access, you have to go to the library. There is still a kind of digital divide in this country between people who have access to certain technologies and people who don't. I do think that this, I want to say again, the struggle for privacy, the struggle for equality. And so when we ask, can we have privacy, I think we're really asking, can we have equality? Can we be holding the government to account? Can we be making sure that these things are reined in? And so some of us might say, well, no, we don't have that situation, but I think it's something we always need to reach for.
Interesting approach. Well, Sarah, I really thank you for chatting with me. Do you have any last thoughts? Maybe give our listeners an idea of why they should read this book.
Sure. What I can say very honestly is this book was written straight from the heart. I tried to get at these characters as people. I hope that readers will find the setting intriguing. As I said, I find that rural Americans aren't always very present in literature and film, and so I tried to create a portrait of two very real, genuine people wrestling with things that are big, like opioid addiction or the war on terror, but also things that are very small, just human relationships. And I hope that it's a compelling portrait of domestic violence and real moral dilemmas without being preachy. I think that it's very immersive for the reader as well.
Sarah St. Vincent, I think you did a great job. Ways to Hide in Winter. Just out from Melville House Publishers. Sure to be a hit. Sarah, thank you so much for talking with us this morning.
Thank you so much for your great question.
This is Tofu Dave Bell and your host.